Hello, everyone. I am ready to take the mic. So, happy Sunday evening. It's good to see you all. As Lynn said, my name is Regina, and I am here to share from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Hi, Laurie. What I will be doing is reading quotes from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, tonight, starting with quote number 700. And then I will be sharing from my journal, which is where I wrote as I contemplated these quotes back in, I think we're looking at January of 2013, so 3 years ago now, although that's hard for me to believe. It seems like a moment ago. So what I'm going to do, just to kind of get us centered, kind of as a prayer, I'm going to play a bit of music, which we can use kind of as a very brief meditation time. The song that I'm going to play is called Oceans by Hillsong United.
I will call for
All right. Thank you very much for joining with me as I listen to that song. I love listening to music in kind of a contemplative way with my eyes closed, being still. If you were at the fall retreat this year, you might remember one day when we talked a bit about awareness, and then everyone went outside for, I think it was 35 minutes, it may have been 45 minutes, to wander alone on a beautiful sunshiny day in Colorado, but just to be aware, and that is, you know, just to be aware of everything. There were lots of plants to be aware of, deer to be aware of, you know, wind to be aware of, just be aware, be aware, be aware. And then when people came back in, I had been sitting there meditating while everyone was out being aware, and I couldn't, well, I don't know, I suppose if I'd opened my mouth, I could have spoken, but it felt like speaking wasn't right. And so we just listened to Kirtana songs for half an hour. Everybody just sat in the room with eyes closed listening to Kirtana, and it was a wonderful, wonderful experience to just spend 30 minutes with eyes closed listening to Kirtana. I love doing that. Music just really goes to the heart. So thanks for joining with me as I do that for my prayer at the beginning of the seven steps and usually at the beginning of the guiding light. Maybe we'll even be doing it at the beginning of the Sufi contemplation group. We'll see. I don't think I've given Lynn the link yet, so let me give Lynn the link to my journal. And of course, this is for everyone else as well. It's just that Lynn is so good about once I share the link, she continues to share it for me and I don't have to think about it. It's very nice. I'm also drinking a little bit of tea. I'm sure some of you know that there's football playoffs happening right now, and football is nothing at all that interests me. And my boyfriend typically doesn't watch football, though he loves it, but, you know, we're usually out doing other things. But now that it's the playoffs, he's watching it. And so I sat down with him, and football for me is the greatest lullaby in the world. So within 10 minutes, I was sleeping in the chair. So I'm waking myself up now with a bit of tea. But that prepares me for the long night, because we do have a bit of a long night here. We have the seven steps followed by Satsang with Timothy Conway. I'll take a half-hour break then to save the recordings, and then I will be back for the daily contemplation. So maybe my nap just prepared me for that. All right, so let's begin. I'm going to read quote 700 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is from the Yoga Vasistha. It is not possible to kill the mind without proper methods. It is not possible to kill the mind without proper methods. And by the way, in this particular quote, kill the mind is in quotes. So it seems to be indicating that that is a way of languaging this rather than something that we actually do. It is not possible to, quote, kill the mind, unquote, without proper methods. And that's kind of interesting. If you were here for the Sunday morning weekly gathering, then you know that that's exactly what Muji said. You know, Sonia read us a message from Muji, where Muji talked about after the awakening experience, where we come to realize ourselves as awareness, that we still need the practice, because the mind, he said, will come back in a very big way, and we still need the practice until the mind is dead, or until the ego is completely dead. And again, this quote says, it is not possible to kill the mind without proper methods. And so we talked a little bit this morning about some of those methods that are helpful. The spiritual practice that we want to be engaged in. And I think that was the message this morning, is that we have this slight idea in our mind that spiritual practice is work. And when we think of spiritual practice as work, we tire of it. And that really what we want to do is fall in love with truth, fall in love with awareness, fall in love with God, so that we want to be engaged in our spiritual practice all of the time. And that will allow us then to be engaged in these proper methods to the final end of the ego. So we talked about that this morning, and now here we have a very similar pointer coming from the Yoga Vasistha. It is not possible to kill the mind without proper methods. So I'm going to look and see what I wrote in my journal when I was contemplating this 3 years ago. The mind's interpretations confirm themselves through the same process of interpretation. This results in conditioning. Conditioning is heavily reinforced through mind's interpretive nature. Strong corrective practices must be invoked to undo mental conditioning. I'll read that one more time. The mind's interpretations confirm themselves through the same process of interpretation. This results in conditioning. Conditioning is heavily reinforced through mind's interpretive nature. Strong corrective practices must be invoked to undo mental conditioning. So, one of the things that we talked about last week is that there isn't an actual projection of the mind, that the projection of the mind is an appearance. In truth, all there is God, or all there is life, or all there is light, or all there is truth, or all there is reality, however you choose to word that. That is all there is, and there has never been anything but that. But the mind has an incredible ability to interpret God, truth, reality, to be something other than what it is. And this is the appearance of the world. And what this is saying is that when the mind interprets something and we believe it, it gets into a loop of repeating the same interpretation in similar circumstances over and over and over again. So we continue to believe the same interpretation repeatedly. And what happens is it appears to be proving itself. For example, let's take this idea that we talked about this morning, the idea that spiritual practice is work. If I have this idea in my mind that spiritual practice is work, I am going to experience spiritual practice as work. My mind will continue to interpret it that way, and that will prove to me that spiritual practice is work. In fact, I believe I heard Timothy Conway this morning in one of the audios I was listening to. It seems like it was probably him talking this morning about how, someone may meditate for 12 years and then quit and say, it didn't work. I give it up and go back to partying. And for him, what he was saying is that comes from in the mind. There always was a doubt that we can't awaken from the me dream. And so what happened was the doubt that we can't awaken from the me dream just got proven. And he was saying you need to uncover that doubt and let go of that doubt. But that's an example of interpretation. If we believe that spiritual practices work, spiritual practice is going to continue to feel like work, and we're going to believe that spiritual practices work, and we're only going to be able to devote limited amounts of time to it because we're going to need breaks from our spiritual practice. if I interpret certain personalities in certain ways, if I interpret some personalities to be very smart and on the ball and other personalities to be not so smart, and not really getting it, this is how I'm going to continue to see those personalities, and it's going to prove to me that I'm right about these people. So because the interpretation continues to interpret the same events, the same type of stimuli in the same way, we prove to ourselves, we believe that we are right. And in fact, one of the things that I have noticed as I've been observing the human mind, not only the human mind that appears to be mine, but the human minds of all of the individuals in my life, the ones I work with, the ones I live with, my family. One thing that I've noticed is that there's this very strong idea in the human psyche that I'm right. I'm right. Which means that we are very invested in believing the mind's interpretations. We're convinced that the mind's interpretations are right. And because we're convinced that the mind's interpretations are right, the mind will continue to interpret in that way and will continue to get proof that we're right. It's also really interesting when you watch the news. I watch the news usually every day. I don't think I've watched it in the last couple of days, but I usually watch the news every day. And one of the things that I notice on the news is the incredible difference in points of view. I mean, just stark opposite points of view. And yet everyone is so convinced that they're right. They see the world the way they see the world. And they're so sure that they're right. So that's what this is pointing to. Quote number 700, actually my journal entry around quote number 700. The mind's interpretations confirm themselves. You hear that? The mind's interpretations confirm themselves through the same process of interpretation. This results in conditioning, which we could call my point of view, my way of perceiving the world, my way of responding or reacting to things. And we're so sure that we're right. Conditioning is heavily reinforced through the mind's interpretive nature. And so, strong corrective practices must be invoked to undo mental conditioning. And I would say that we need to have a really strong desire for truth, or a really strong desire for awakening, in order to break that habit of believing we're right about our interpretations, especially when the world keeps showing us that we're right, mainly because our mind is continuing to interpret the same way over and over and over again. One of the practices that I started taking part in shortly after I began the spiritual path, within months of beginning the spiritual path, is a teaching that I know many of you have heard me talk about, called root cause inquiry. And root cause inquiry at that time just kind of came to me spontaneously. I might even have thought it was my invention. But since then, I've heard so many spiritual teachers talk about practicing the same thing, although they don't have the same name for it, right? Maybe the name is my invention. But if you listen to Bentinho Massaro, you will sometimes hear him talk about asking why. Jan Fraser, I've heard her talk about it, and I'm sure there are many, many others, but I remember the two of them because they each brought it up at the fall retreat that we had. This process of looking to find out why I experience or why I perceive the way I do allows me to begin the process of unbelieving my own interpretations. For example, one of the stories that I remember from when I first started learning root cause inquiry had to do with my boss, whom I actually liked. But you know, whether you like your boss or not, typically, unless your mind is healed, there are issues that arise between you and that authority figure, right? That's pretty typical. It's pretty much never a perfect relationship with our boss, unless the mind is healed. So even though I liked my boss very, very well, there were certainly these conflicts that arose. And I remember that there was one particular project that, I don't remember the details of the project now, but it was a project that we needed, some kind of a process that we needed to develop, and then we needed to roll out to the entire management team in our company. And there were about 40 people on this management team. That would have been department directors, vice presidents, and senior vice presidents, and the CEO. Those people would have been the management team. And so there was some process that we needed to develop, and we needed to roll out to the whole management team, and then the management team would begin to practicing it and rolling it out to the thousands of people who worked for them. And I remember that my boss and I sat down, we talked about the process, we agreed to the process, and then it was my job to go off and implement it. And I built whatever needed to be built and organized whatever needed to be organized. And, you know, it took me a few weeks, maybe even a month, to get this process ready to roll out. And when the process is ready to roll out, per the agreement that my boss and I had made, I sent this email to everyone on the management team, rolling out the process, telling them whatever it was they needed to know about it, when the process began. And the next thing I knew, I got called up into the boss's office. And she was upset, because she had presented this process to the CEO after she and I had met, and he had decided he did not want that process rolled out in the company. But yet she never came back and told me that. And now she was upset with me for having rolled it out, like I was supposed to be a mind reader or something. And I was so angry at her. You know, she was the one that knew that the CEO didn't want it rolled out. She found that out weeks ago. She never told me. You know, I did everything I was supposed to do. I worked very hard on it. I rolled it out, and now I was in trouble. I was so angry at her. And, you know, if I wanted to, I could, especially back then when I knew more details of the story, I could have told that story and got so many people to agree with me that my boss was completely in the wrong. And to be mad at me, you know, was just projection, right? She's just projecting on you, you know? But, yeah, I'm never upset for the reason I think. I accepted that statement as true. I was a fairly new Course in Miracles student. And what I had chosen to do was realize that I am never upset for the reasons I think. And I had decided that whenever I was upset, instead of believing my mind's interpretation, I would go within with root cause inquiry, and I would look, and I would find out what I was really upset about. And so instead of just believing that, you know, bosses should tell their employees, if a CEO doesn't like something, they should tell the employee so that the employee doesn't spend weeks working on it. Instead of believing that whole story, I went home that night and I practiced root cause inquiry. And I don't remember each of the different steps down to the root now, because that was a very long time ago. But what I do remember is that I would ask, you know, why am I upset? You know, and the thought would come back, well, because Beth did this and this and this. And I accepted if my mind was perfectly healed, that would not upset me. So why am I upset? And I began looking inward. And I had to drill down, dig down a little bit. But when I finally got to the bottom, what I saw was that I really did not think I deserved to be in my role. You know, I was a director of a department in a national company. And I believed that everyone else around me, all of the other directors, you know, they had the proper education and they'd, you know, gone up in the ranks the proper way so that they were qualified for their jobs. But somehow I had cheated and landed there by luck and that I really wasn't as qualified. And of course, you know, those of you who have practiced root cause inquiry, you know that when I looked underneath that, because again, when I got to that level, what I needed to do was accept that if I had a perfectly healed mind, even the fact that maybe my education wasn't as good and that, you know, I had gotten into this role a little easier than other people, that wouldn't upset me. So what was really, really bothering me? And of course, I needed to look under there. And what I found underneath that was, of course, you guys know, that I'm the big loser. I'm the big loser in the world. And when I saw this, I knew that all that had happened here was that that belief about myself had been triggered. And I wasn't really even upset at my boss for not telling me. What I was really upset about is that I was scared to death that this is when everybody else was looking at me and thinking what I believed to be true, that I was the biggest loser. And this itself is a mental interpretation. This belief, which is a core belief in the mind, which many of us suffer with in many, many ways. This itself is just a mental interpretation. And so what I needed to do after I found that belief at the bottom of this upset was I needed to go into a space of trusting that that was nothing but an interpretation that I had made up and repeated over and over and over again so that it seemed true, but that it wasn't true. Now, what's really interesting about this particular interpretation, as well as some other interpretations, such as the belief in lack, the belief that if I don't take care of myself, something bad will happen, that, you know, grace certainly isn't going to step in. You know, many other beliefs like that, the belief that the truth is not true, that the world is true, but the truth is not true. These very core beliefs that are part of the ego thought system. In my experience, finding them through root cause inquiry, seeing them once, was not enough to heal them. Why? How many times have we believed them? Steph is asking, was it easy for you to let go of that belief? And the answer is no. And that's the biggest, loudest no I can say. If I could swear in this room, I would be swearing, you know. No, it was not easy. And that's the point of what I'm sharing right now, is that we have believed these interpretations millions upon millions upon millions of times. And for us to think that we can uncover something once or twice, look at it once or twice, and have faith once or twice that our interpretation is wrong, and then we are healed, oh my gosh, that's silliness. These ideas are so heavily believed that we need to look at them, I'm going to say hundreds of times, without believing energy. So the story I just told you where I did the root cause inquiry and I uncovered that the real cause of my upset was because I thought that I really was the biggest loser. That was only one of dozens upon dozens of dozens of times that I did root cause inquiry and found that same root at the bottom of my upset or fear. Often that same idea resulted in fear, like you know, those of us who are guided to come into the sanctuary and teach in some way. Usually when we first start, when we first take the mic for the first time, we're experiencing some kind of fear, right? Well, that fear, if you drill down on it, is the same belief. We're afraid that we're the biggest loser. And when we take the mic and we speak in this room in front of all of these other spiritual people, it's going to become obvious to everyone what a loser I am. I mean, you know, so this belief results in all kinds of upsets and all kinds of fears. And it's extremely, very heavily believed. And so, yeah, as Cirvelo, I'm not sure who that is, but as Cirvelo has reminded us, the quote that we're looking at is, "It is not possible to kill the mind without proper methods." Why do we think that we can meditate once or twice, contemplate once or twice, do root cause inquiry once or twice, and we should be healed? We didn't believe these thoughts only once or twice. These are heavily believed ideas. Our interpretations, again, have been believed thousands upon thousands of times. And so if we want to be free, really free, we need to be willing to practice things like root cause inquiry, things like rest, accept, and trust, things like having faith that our interpretations are not correct, things like giving willingness to see another way, things like meditation. We need to be willing to practice these things repeatedly for as long as it takes. I have the Muji reading from this morning here. Let me see, let me just read part of what Muji said, because he's really saying the same thing. He says, "The first stage is that blast of recognition, where it is seen beyond doubt." And this means the truth is seen beyond doubt. "This is so important, because once this has taken place and occurred to itself that I am that, then the doubt is removed." And of course, here he's talking about people who have had these flashes of awakening experiences. And I know there's people in the room here who maybe have not yet even had those experiences yet. And what he is saying is true even for people who have come to realize beyond a doubt that I am the true self. So if what he is about to say is true for those people, imagine how true it is for those of us who may still have doubt, who may still think, gosh, it seems more like I'm a person than anything else, right? It's very, very true for us what he is about to say. He says, "The first stage is that blast of recognition where it is seen beyond doubt. This is so important because once this has taken place and occurred to itself that I am that, then the doubt is removed. At least you have experienced the potential. You know that it is not merely theory. Theory cannot give you this taste, so you know this. Thereafter, mind sometimes comes back very strongly. It's like it's fighting for dominance, in fact. But gradually now, with the force of conviction, with the force of that liberating experience, a sort of inner confidence surfaces. It allows you to complete your practice, completely comb out all this noise that you've picked up by associating with what is transient. That will take its own time." He says, "To realize the truth for a moment or two, for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, is not enough. Something contemplates it because the mind pushes up again. Weed pushes up again because the force of habit will keep trying to remind the beingness that you are a person. And because so many times you've believed it in the past, you will believe it again. So each time it comes, something looks. And I love this part. Listen to this. Each time it comes, something looks and dismisses or transcends this suggestion until gradually there's not energy left in the egoic mind. It loses all its influence. And then there's no more unsteadiness for you. It's like you've fallen through a hole and you're all space again. So what he says here again is this conditioning, because we have believed our mind's interpretations thousands upon thousands, if not millions and billions of times, right? Again, we're not going to let go of a false belief by looking at it once or twice. We need to be very, very consistent. He says, again, he says, the force of habit will keep trying to remind you the beingness, that you are a person. Or we could say, if we're talking about the I am the greatest loser, or the scum of the earth thought, the unworthiness thought, that the mind is going to try to keep convincing you that you are unworthy. Or if it's the lack thought, the mind is going to continue to try to teach you that there is lack. You know, you have to take care of yourself. Nobody else will. All of these beliefs are going to try to repeat themselves because they are heavily believed. So each time it comes, Muji says, so each time it comes, something looks and dismisses or transcends this suggestion until gradually there's not energy left in the egoic mind. So let's go back to my example then and Stephanie's question about, did I let go of this belief easily? I cannot describe to you how deeply I believed that I was the scum of the earth. But some of you probably know how deeply I believed it because you believe it to be true about you to the same degree. You know, sometimes it's hard to believe that someone else believed that, but I did. I believed it so much that when I first started trying to let go of the belief, it felt a little bit, maybe a lot of bit, like a lie. You know, and saying to myself, this is just a belief that I have made up about myself, that felt like a lie. Because it felt like the truth is I'm the greatest loser. The truth is I'm the scum of the earth. The truth is I am not as good as anyone else, right? That's the truth. You guys are saying, yeah, so you know this. So it felt like a little bit of a lie. No, a lot of bit of a lie. But what Muji is saying here and what our quote is saying here and what the journal entry is saying here is if we want to be free of this interpretive conditioning that's been believed over and over again, we need to learn to dismiss the suggestion when it arises. So here's how that works. At least here's how that worked for me. The next time, first of all, every time I was upset for a very long time, I would do root cause inquiry. And many, many, many times, most of the time, I would keep coming back to that same belief. But not always. Sometimes there was another belief there, like the belief in lack, or the belief that the truth is not true. There were some other false beliefs that needed to be seen. So I never assumed that I knew why I was upset. I would do root cause inquiry in my journal and look. But the vast majority of the times that I was upset in the beginning was because of that belief that I am unworthy, I am the scum of the earth, I am the lowest of the low, etc. And so each time I uncovered that belief again as being believed, I would trust that the Holy Spirit's interpretation of what I am is correct. And my interpretation of what I am is an error. And like I said, in the beginning, that even felt like a lie. So I would set and feel the feelings of that's a lie. And I would say to myself again, I trust that the Holy Spirit's interpretation of what I am is correct. And what I think I am is an error. And if you're wondering where I got that from, by the way, I got that from A Course in Miracles, a section called The Two Evaluations. And what began to happen as I practiced that, I call this faith, is I began to practice that faith that the Holy Spirit was more right about me than I am. Even though it seemed like I was more right. As I just practiced this faith, and notice this is just dismissing the suggestion when it's offered again, right? So as I practiced this faith, every time I uncovered the idea that there was something else that I was upset about because I believed I was the greatest loser. And again, I want to point out that I'm talking about months and months of faith, not once or twice. Months and months of consistent faith. A shift began to happen. That shift was not the letting go of the belief. That wasn't the first shift that occurred. The first shift that occurred was I began to actually see that I was doing it to myself. I began to actually see myself accepting the suggestion. So, for example, in the beginning, you know, when there was this miscommunication, I'll call it, between my boss and me, and I just got angry at her, it seemed obvious to me that this was her fault, right, until I did root cause inquiry. But after months and months of expressing faith, every time I uncovered the belief that I was unworthy, I began to see myself make the decision. So if I was by then I actually wasn't even working at the same place, but if I had been working at the same place and something else had happened with my boss, I would actually see myself kind of think that oh no thought. It's a very fast thought. It's not a whole sentence, but it's like, oh no, this is the time that everybody's going to see how unworthy I am. I began to see the oh no thought. And I began to notice that when I looked in the mirror and I looked at my body, that I was the one deciding that I was the ugliest woman on earth. And I began to notice that, you know, when I was in my house, if I looked at a window, for example, and a window was not clean, you know, there was dirt on the window, that I was the one deciding that I was in some way unworthy because of the dirty window. I was lazy. I was not good enough. You know, you had to have a clean house to be good enough. The first shift that occurred was that I began to see that I was the one deciding. Yeah, incompetent is great, Lynn. I mean, who says I am incompetent? I do. Now, sometimes when I teach this to people, they'll say, well, that's not true. You know, of course, the mind always wants to deny this. That's not true. My husband tells me I'm incompetent. My husband tells me I'm stupid. My husband tells me I'm lazy. However, if you start to really, really pay close attention, very close, subtle attention, you'll notice that you decide he's right. When he says you're incompetent, or if it's your wife or girlfriend or whoever, But when someone else says you're incompetent, or someone else says you're stupid, or someone else says you're lazy, or someone else says you're irresponsible, you decide they're right. And that was the first shift that occurred to me. I began to notice myself, judging myself dozens upon dozens of times per day. And this is a little bit of a crazy phase when you begin to really see just how down you are on yourself. You know, at least for me, it was a little bit hard to take. It kind of feels like you're underneath a manure pile and you'll never get out. But once this begins to happen, you're now ready for another practice, a more advanced practice, if you will, and that is to dismiss your own suggestions about yourself. And that might look something like this. You look at a window, a dirty window, and you decide this means that somehow you're unworthy. And you literally just say to yourself, ah, I'm the one who just decided I'm unworthy. I don't have to make those kinds of decisions about myself. This is why I believe that I'm the greatest loser. You know, you just kind of point that out to yourself. And if somebody else should call you incompetent, you notice, ah, he's calling me incompetent, but I'm agreeing with it. I do not have to believe these things about myself. If I continue to believe these things about myself, of course I'm going to feel unworthy, but it's just me doing it, right? And this is the way that I began to dismiss these suggestions. Now again, I didn't do this once or twice. I did this for, well, I want to say 3 to 4 years. 3 to 4 years of noticing, ah, and being very consistent. So the first thing that has to happen, by the way, and a lot of people haven't even gotten to the first phase. So if you haven't gotten to the first phase, don't think, oh my gosh, that means I'm unworthy. Because it doesn't. That would just be your decision about it. It just means you haven't gotten beyond the first phase yet, and you can. You can do it right now, today. Boom. Stop blaming other people or external situations for how you feel. That has to come first. As long as you are blaming me for upsetting you, or your children for upsetting you, or President Obama for upsetting you, or your husband for upsetting you, you're never going to start looking and noticing those hidden beliefs about yourself. You must decide that no one, nothing, is responsible for your upset but you. And then begin to look and discover why you are upset, truly. What is being triggered in me? When he does that, when she does that, when they don't do that, right? What is being triggered in me? What am I afraid of? And get down to those beliefs. And again, if you practice this, what I call root cause inquiry, time and time again, you're going to find a few common beliefs being triggered time and time again. It's amazing. A few beliefs are resulting in thousands of upsets. And then, as you begin to discover what's really causing you to be upset, you need to enter into the faith phase first. The faith phase being, I trust I'm wrong. Because remember, the mistake we've been making is believing our mind's interpretation over and over and over again. So we need to begin to trust that our mind is wrong. And that is a very, very important phase, and it might take a long time because the human psyche, each and every one of us, believes very deeply that we're right. Because again, our interpretations appear to keep proving themselves to us. That's why I call it faith. Faith that I'm wrong. And there's nothing more blessed than being wrong about the idea that you are the lowest of the low. There's nothing more blessed than being wrong about the belief in lack. There's nothing more blessed in being wrong about the idea that you have to take care of yourself because there's no power greater than you that will ever do it. There's nothing more blessed than being wrong about the belief that the truth is not true, only the world is true. So be willing to have faith that you are wrong. And each time you see these suggestions arising again, have that faith again. And then you may enter at some point magically or miraculously into the next phase where you begin to actually see yourself making these decisions. You may begin to see your mind deciding that you're unworthy. You may begin to see your mind deciding that there is lack, that there is no truth. You may begin to see these things. And as these thoughts become more visible to you, you can actually start letting go at an earlier point. You can start changing your mind about a decision you just made. You can say, ah, I see, I just decided that, right? I see, I'm the one that's making this up. And you can begin to let go at an earlier point. But what we need to do, what Muji is saying, what this quote is saying, what the journal is saying, is that we do need to begin to stop believing ourselves. We need to practice dismissing these interpretations that have been believed over and over again. And if we don't, if we just go through the day believing our mind, the mind is not going to die. The ego is not going to die. Those experiences that come from that believing are going to continue, right? We're not going to become free if we don't take some action. Here it's called the proper methods to reverse the habit of just believing everything our point of view says. So again, this cervello person, I'm not sure who cervello is. Cervello is very clear on what we're talking about here and keeps going back to it. We have not easy but doable written above. Of course, again, the quote, it is not possible to kill the mind without proper methods. And then reworded, it is not possible to, I love this, to kill what I have written on the whiteboard of the mind without proper methods. That's beautiful, cervello. I don't know who you are, but that's beautiful. I love that idea of the whiteboard of the mind, and we're the ones that have written on it. It's not possible to kill what I have written on the whiteboard of the mind without proper methods. So spiritual practice really is important. Taking these steps really is important. And realizing that once or twice may not do it is important. Oh, you're Nathan. Oh, I know you, Nathan. I think I know you, right? Especially since you say cycling mates. I know exactly who you are. So now the cat is out of the bag. All right. Mad dog. That's another name for you, huh? Yeah, Nathan from New Zealand. I know who you are. Well, very good staying on point, Nathan. I really love how you did that and kept the point right there in front of our face in this last hour as we talked about it. Because, of course, the mind does want us to kind of lose track of what we're talking about. And you kept us right there the whole time, and I appreciate that. So let me just do a couple minutes of review, and then I'll need to go and get Timothy. So first of all, the quote we were looking at this entire hour, it is not possible to kill the mind without proper methods. And hopefully now everybody sees that very clearly. And you aren't waiting for magic. You're waiting for the proper methods. You're ready for the proper methods, which do lead to a miracle. It feels like a miracle when this conditioning dies, but it's not magic. And then in the journal, I wrote, the mind's interpretations confirm themselves through the same process of interpretation. This results in conditioning. Conditioning is heavily reinforced through mind's interpretive nature. Strong corrective practices must be invoked to undo mental conditioning. Strong corrective practices must be invoked to undo mental conditioning. So what I am going to do now is release the mic. Len, maybe you can play a song or something like that. I will go and get Timothy, and then I will come back, and when we're back in the room and ready to go, I'll put my hand up so you'll be aware. Yeah. I will leave the room to get Timothy because it's easier to do it that way, but I will be back. Thank you, everyone, for joining me for the 7 Steps to Awakening. I'll see you in about 5 minutes.